So welcome everybody to today's podcast, Beyond the Deal. Here we have Aaron Novello, and we're certainly thrilled to have him. He's been a personal coach and mentor of mine for the past 5 years and drastically changed my life. But, you know, to get to know Aaron, he started his career in 2006. He's personally helped over 2,000 families buy or sell real estate, selling over 100 homes most of his career and over 200 homes twice in his career. Outside of that, he's built one of the most impressive organizations at EXP, where he helps guide and mentor over 450 agents right now. Again, I couldn't be happier to have him on the podcast to really just dive into some of the stuff that we've worked on over the years, but more importantly, how some of the knowledge and skills that he can bring up and provide to you guys will help you in your real estate careers, but also your personal lives as well. So Aaron, thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome, bro. I'm excited to be with you.
So I wanted to start off, like, and you said dating yourself. We both started in the real estate industry back in 2006, sort of had different career trajectories, but you started in 2006 and sort of hit the ground running pretty quickly after your first year. I know you tell the story that your first year, you only made $13,000, but then very quickly after that, built your business to the point that, you know, again, you've done over 2,000 homes in your career and sort of retired from the residential real estate transaction business. What do you think, like early on, as far as strategy and mindset, how did you so quickly go from, you know, very low production your first year to sort of ramping it up very, very quickly after that?
Yeah, it was really an issue of data, right? So that first calendar year when I only made $13,000, the data that I was receiving was, you know, sit open houses, wear my name tag at the grocery store and smile at people, be prepared to go an extended period of time and not make any money. What I became aware of is that that data produced a very specific outcome, which was not that much income. And then I got proximity, right? Because proximity is power, to a guide who was able to point out to me and show me what was actually worth stacking top of, right? What this business was all about, and that the money wasn't in the service. It was actually in the selling of the service, right? So all of your listeners, we all have a real estate license. I imagine the vast majority of people who listen and watch. And that allows us to perform the same service. At the same time, we all don't make the same amount of money. And the question is why? It's like, well, some people know how to sell the service better than others. So once I became aware of that, then chose to stack time on top of learning how to sell the service, right? Began to role play twice a day, 6 days a week, hand write out scripts, record myself doing presentations. And that allowed me to kind of ramp up that learning curve in terms of selling and the skill of selling. And then also another key mental map that was important is at that beginning stage, I was just kind of working with any business. Didn't matter what it was, whether it was a rental, primarily, you know, working with buyers, maybe a listing here or there. It wasn't concentrated, a focused effort, you know, because when you are smart, hardworking, and ambitious, the challenge is trying to figure out what's worth stacking time on top of. And another key mental map was that all the leverage is on the listing side. With that, I made a conscious, purposeful, intentional decision to focus all of my time and energy. So those two combined really allowed me to begin to produce. So after that first calendar year, made about $115,000 the second year. And then every year after that, it was about 25 to 30% increase. And if you do that, you double your income every 4 or 5 years. Took me 5 years to get up to 100 transactions. As you start to do more deals, there's some more specialized knowledge you need to learn in terms of systems, processes, and procedures. But I would suggest that those two key mental maps were critical in that ramp up in transaction volume.
Now, when you talk about proximity to the right people, how did you determine, like, how did you come across the right people at that time to give you that data and that knowledge that, you know, that you used and started to implement? Like, how did you know you were in the right spot at that point?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I had the broker manager at the time. He said something to me, which was pretty interesting. I was in his office and, you know, I was very, very ambitious and had very big goals and objectives. He recognized that. I think he also recognized, to his credit, that he wasn't really equipped to help me or serve me in the way that really I needed, right? A guide to be at the time. And he just said to me, like, hey, if you really want to accomplish what you want to accomplish, you should probably consider start attending events that can give you the type of information that will really equip you to, you know, achieve what you want in the real estate space. And to his credit, I mean, that was very helpful or useful information. So then I started to really seek out a guide, right? Somebody who had a consistent track record of producing favorable outcomes. And I think the other thing that was very helpful or useful is, like, when deciding a guide, right, there's a few things that you want to look at. The first is do they have a demonstrated track record of producing outcomes? The reason is because if they've consistently produced an outcome over an extended period of time, underneath it, that means that there's a system. And if there's a system, they can teach it to you. You know, I think our industry is full of individuals. You know, we live in a world where you don't have to be competent to be famous or to be known. So, you know, the tendency is to put a lot of people on panels and like, ooh and ah and this and that, when we actually don't know what's underneath that, right? So that's the first thing that I would propose or suggest in terms of seeking out a guide. The second is, you know, I never want to take advice from somebody who doesn't have the life that I want already, right? So kind of looking underneath the hood and being like, okay, has this person accomplished long-term? Do they have a demonstrated track record of good judgment over time?
Yeah.
And then the third thing I would propose is, like, what do they have me saying and doing? And is that okay? Is that in alignment with the person that I want to become? Because we have to be very careful of who we become in pursuit of the thing that we actually want. Because the person that we become will either make us very happy or very sad, right? So that's another consideration. It's critical to seek out a guide because despite being intellectually capable or despite having a lot of ambition and hardworking, you know, the test that you take to get a license has nothing to do with actually making money, like, at all. Yeah, that's what I would propose or suggest in terms of, like, seeking out that guide.
Do you think it's easier or harder these days to find the right guide? I mean, back in the day, there was probably a consolidation. It wasn't as easy. There wasn't as many guides out there as there are today. And sometimes it's almost like a paralysis by too much information or too many options. Do you feel like that? I know you just sort of laid out the mental map of how to choose the guide. Do you think that obviously still rings true today? Do you think it's harder for the average agent to find the right proximity, or?
Because of media, we now have the capacity to spend time with somebody in the digital world to get to know them in a parasocial way and get to kind of be exposed to their thinking, what it is that they're teaching. And is that in alignment, again, with my values? And do I see this to be, you know, truth and helpful, right? Is this person a guide that I believe can help me to solve my problems? So I think where people get stuck, to your point, yes, you have way more access than we did previously. It's a pretty remarkable time to be alive. I think a lot of agents fall under the false misperception that, like, I can just go to, like, YouTube University and that'll be enough. And I think the purpose of learning, we always have to remember the purpose of learning. The purpose of learning is doing. So you want to learn about the thing so you can learn to do the thing and then actually do the thing. Yep. So if I'm not doing the thing, I haven't actually learned anything. So, you know, you can consume content and data, decide over time, is this individual somebody that their values are aligned with mine? Do I agree with what it is that they're teaching? Have I seen it work in my life? You know, I had a guy reach out to me via media. He was like, yeah, dude, I watched 100 hours of your content in the last 90 days. I'm like, great. He's like, yeah, I listened to your listing presentation over and over again. And I went on a $1.5 million listing, took the listing and sold it. And then you can say, like, okay, this person's probably a guy that I want to get closer proximity to. But then making that connection that just access to the data and the content is not enough, that you want to get proximity in terms of, like, a community, or in terms of, you know, maybe perhaps like a coaching relationship, because that's where you get accountability. That's where you get, you know, really access at a higher level to their thinking structure. Because, you know, information, we're awash with information these days, but, like, if we are sitting in a room right now, I'm like, okay, how many people know that if you consume less calories than, you know, you burn, you will lose weight? Like, everybody, does anybody need, like, a master's degree in nutrition to know that? No.
Right.
Well, how good? Yeah. But how good does that information do most people?
Right.
Not that
everybody
great.
Knows it. Nobody uses it.
Right. The same with, like, you know,
how many people know that if you live within your means, make more money, store and invest the difference, you'll build wealth over time.
Yep.
I don't think you need a PhD in economics to figure that out. At the same time, it doesn't really do a lot of people a lot of good, right? So yes, people have more access to guides, and over time you can decide which one you want to spend more time with and get proximity to, but then making that next step, which is to actually get in proximity to them.
Well, it's been interesting to watch you, because we've known each other, you know, around 5 years or so. And it's been interesting to watch your transformation in media, because when we first met each other, I mean, you barely had an online presence at all. I think I probably saw one or two pictures that maybe your wife had posted on Instagram. Yeah. Yeah. And over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, you've grown an audience that, you know, you people consume your content. Your content is consumed hundreds of thousands of times a month, and it's become a major sort of component of, you know, what you're doing right now to provide value to other people. Why the shift? Like, what did you see that sort of changed your mind? What was that pivotal point? Because I think it's a challenge that a lot of real estate agents have right now, is sort of committing to it. So I'm wondering, like, what was that moment like that sort of changed from you didn't really value social media to what you're doing right now?
Yeah. So I think the first thing that comes to mind is there's a difference between being a follower and being a student. So I had given access to my thinking, you know, to, let's say, like a guide. And the guide at the time was very negative and opposed to media. And because I had used information that guide had given me and it produced favorable outcomes, we can get under the kind of error in thinking, which is that they get like a halo effect. So like everything they say must be good.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. And I think a really high, that like the highest form of intelligence is like a willingness to change your mind and ultimately getting what you want. Mm-hmm. And so I began to hear that and for a long time just push it away. But then, you know, if you want to produce really favorable outcomes, Tony Robbins tells us there's a couple things that are required. The first is the ability to recognize patterns. So I started to look around in the world that we live in today, and I'm watching people like, you know, the Kardashians turn attention into billions of dollars. I'm watching Jake and Paul, Logan, the brothers, right? Turn attention into, I don't know, $30 million boxing matches and Prime Energy drink and become billionaires. I'm watching Mr. Beast, right? Like do what he's doing with attention and parlaying it into consumer brands that are doing hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue a year. So that I noticed that pattern, and that was conflicting with what I was hearing.
Right. The belief that you had.
That I have, right? And a belief is just an opinion that you develop loyalty to over time. So that started to cause like a little bit of, if you remember from the Matrix, like it's like follow the white rabbit. And then I see the right white rabbit and you're like, wait, what? And it was that experience. Like, wait, what? This cognitive dissonance, right? What I believe smashing up against something I'm seeing that is actually true in the marketplace. And then I read a book, and the book was, it's The Almanac of Naval Ravikant. And it sounds like it came from like a cave somewhere in the middle of nowhere. But that's not actually what's true. Naval is a very successful, internet kind of technology entrepreneur in Silicon Valley. He's had multiple exits. The book is broken down into two sections. The first is about building wealth, and the second is about, you know, like happiness. But in the first section of the book, you know, it's rare that you read something where, at least for me anyway, and I'm not suggesting like, you know, I know everything. I've just, you know, I read a lot. And usually information is recycled. You know what I mean? Like truth is truth is truth. And somebody just says it in a different way. You know what I'm saying? Like it's packaged in a different way, but it's not necessarily new. Well, this book, I heard something that I'd never heard before. And it really melted my brain. Like I had to really stop and think. And it's probably one of the mental maps that have changed my life the most over the last 4 years. Truly. It's been the foundation of everything I've been doing since I read it. And he talks about that there's four different forms of leverage. The lowest form of leverage is labor, which is where we have people working with us or for us. Maybe if you have a team or something of that nature. And it's better than having no leverage. But the problem is that, you know, people get tired, they quit, they get sick, they want more splits, like whatever, right? but it's better than no leverage. And then there's another form of leverage, which is capital, which is money. So if me and you invest money into apartment building, into syndication, the reason why that's superior than labor is that it works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, never gets tired, never quits, never wants more splits, right? But there's these two new forms of leverage that are new over the last 30 years. And the people that are using them have become the most wealthiest people on the planet. And they're actually more powerful than the first two. And the first one is media. And it's like, well, why is media actually more valuable than money? Why is attention more valuable than money? That's a very interesting concept. Well, if you think about money, if me and you invested in an apartment building, it works there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but it's isolated. It's restricted in where it can work. It can only work in the apartment building. Well, attention, media works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, anywhere on planet Earth. It's not restricted. So if that's what's true, which again, when you match that with the pattern of what we're seeing, how people are using attention, it's like, oh, I should be willing to trade money for attention all day long because attention is more valuable. And then the highest form is code or software, right? And if we look around us, Larry Ellison, Oracle, code, Zuckerberg, code, Elon with PayPal and even Tesla, code, like Bezos is code. The highest form of leverage has produced the most wealth. And right underneath that is media. And you see all these media personalities with lots of attention, creating huge amounts of wealth, right? Once those clicked, I recognized, oh, this is a thing. So then I went down a path of, again, what I do when I always don't know something, is I found somebody who was world-class at it. This person had multiple different companies doing $1 million a month in revenue, and their primary client acquisition channel was media. And I paid to get access to them, which is perfectly okay. and it's immature to imagine that they would give you access otherwise, because they don't need your coffee money, I promise, or your lunch money. And for a year, my content creators were on calls with their content creators. We just sucked everything out of their brains. And what that ended up producing over time is last year, just on YouTube, we had 1.8 million views on YouTube, 72,000 hours worth of watch time. Now, every 90 days between Meta and YouTube, we receive about 1 million views. You know, that just allows us to reach more people and to add more value to more people. Cause I think the best way to show somebody you can help them is to help them for free.
That's great. And so that really comes down to mindset too. And I know we've worked extensively on mindset over the years, coaching together. And I'm curious, like, because you coach so many people, you have a large organization here at AXP, you come across a lot of agents and I'm sure a lot of mental roadblocks. What do you think the most common mental roadblock for agents is right now in real estate? And how do you help them focus on what's important to stay resilient?
Yeah. So I think the environment that we're in right now is something that's relatively new to most agents. And by that, what I mean is, you know, for a very long period of time, an extended period of time, I'd say about a decade, real estate was just a kind of steady march upwards, right? In terms of units and volume. Over the last 18-ish to 24 months, you know, we went from 6.5 million transactions to under 4 million, and we've stayed there consistently for 3 years. That is a new experience for a lot of agents, right? Because there's just less units. Now, the commission pool has gone up because the prices have gone up so much, right? At the same time, there's just less units. There's less deals to go around. So as such, we have to remember that business is just strategy and people. So I'll say that again, not because people didn't hear me, but because it's just important. Business is just strategy and people. And what I see happening is an unwillingness to pivot and change strategy, right? Because money has an addictive quality, and because of it, we get addicted to the way that we receive it. So if something worked in the past, we also have this quirk in thinking, it's called resulting, which is where it's like, oh, this worked once, that means it's always going to work.
Right.
Well, that's just not true because it's based on market conditions, right? It's based on the environment that we're in. So the pivot that I see agents needing to make right now is the following. The first is there's only four ways to increase business. And everybody teaches the same ones because there's only four. I don't care if it's Tony Robbins, Myron Golden, like number one is increase leads. Number two is to increase conversion. Number three is ascension. So meaning like, if you sell somebody a primary residence, then you help them to build a real estate portfolio, or you sell them a second home or investment property. And then number four is retention. You keep them for longer, yep. Right? So you get more repeat and referral business. And the primary one that agents need to be focused on right now, due to market dynamics, is number one and number two. So it's increasing leads. And then the second is conversion of those leads, mm-hmm. right? So to increase leads, though, we're going to have to do things we've never done before. We're going to have to learn different skills we've never learned before. And that's the resistance. Like, that's the internal friction, is this kind of desire and hope and wish and prayer to the real estate gods that, like, I could just keep doing what I'm doing and it'll be okay. And that's just, you know, hope is a beautiful word, but it's a terrible business strategy, right? So lead sources that I see are working right now is like, now we have to make data-driven decision around lead sources, because now we have the data. So when me and you were coming up, we didn't have data. Now you actually have data. So I know. So like the question is okay, wouldn't it make logical sense that if I have data at my disposal, that I would want to spend the time, if I'm going to spend the time marketing or prospecting to a group or a lead source, wouldn't I want that lead source to have a high density of motivated, qualified sellers? The answer is yeah. I mean, that's just like a no-brainer, right? Well, those are things that are like life events, right? Death, divorce, job relocation, moving to assisted living facilities. For me personally, it was probate. We did, you know, 60 of those deals a year for an extended period of time. That lead source is one in which 65% of those homes are free and clear statistically. Motivation's extremely high. And the second largest group of humans, like cohort in the United States behind millennials, is baby boomers. And they're an average age of 65 or older. So the question is that going to be a plentiful source of motivated, qualified sellers moving forward? The answer is yes. That requires you learning a new form of specialized knowledge, learning where to get the data, learning that conversation, learning, you're right? It requires something new. So the thing that mentally everybody needs to just accept is that you don't get more because you want more. You get more because you become more, right? So it's like, am I in the process of becoming? If I'm not doing the deals that I want, over the last 18 to 24 months, have I done anything differently in terms of lead sources, right? Yeah. And then the second is with conversion, is just understanding product knowledge, right? So I think that a lot of us agents, due to kind of these guidance or coaches or gurus in the space that have basically been saying the same thing for 50 years, just recycling it, right?
Yep.
We've been pigeonholed in our thinking. So we think like the only way that we can help somebody is by listing their home and selling it or helping them buy, when there's actually this whole other product knowledge around the creative side of real estate, cash offers, wholesales, novation, sub two, if we learned would allow us to add more value to consumers and thus do more deals, yep. right? So the individuals that are adopting this kind of strategy and mental map in you know, the organization or with coaching clients, like they're having their best years ever because they've pivoted strategically. Yeah, I think those are really like what I'm seeing happening in the marketplace. Oh, and then the third thing would be is like in terms of skill sets, most agents over the last 5 years haven't had to be really good at presenting price.
Yep.
They take the credit for like, oh, it sold for this. It had nothing to do with you. It's just market dynamics, right? They've never had to be good at getting price adjustments, and that's creating an issue, right? They have never had the preponderance, the majority of the offers coming in less than the asking price. And then during inspections, I'm asking for something. Yep. So these are skill sets.
Or even having an inspection to begin with.
Yeah, or even one to begin with. That's exactly right. So these are all skill sets that they don't possess, or if they did, they'd become weak and flabby.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we need to be adapting to the marketplace. So for the last 5 or 6 months, because I saw this coming, you know, me and Jose on our live streams, all we've been equipping people is, hey, how to have the price adjustment conversation, how to frame the conversation around price. Right? Because now sellers are still imagining it's, you know, 18 months ago and buyers, you know, think it's 2008. So how to frame that conversation prior to delivering the message, right? How to do a honeymoon period for listings. Because most agents who have listed properties, they would never have to talk to the seller because they'd put on the market, get an offer, like, great. They've never had to like talk to them for 90 to 120 days.
Right.
Right. So like, what does that honeymoon period look like? What does that servicing of the listing look like? You know, when people don't get what they want, because what I've shared with people is like, okay, well, how do children behave when they don't get what they want? They have an adult temper tantrum, right? So learning how to manage that. So yeah, those three things I would propose are like the key, not only mental maps, but kind of tactical things that agents need to be doing to be dealing with market dynamics and conditions, because I don't foresee them changing anytime soon. Like, I see rates staying higher for longer.
Same here. And so what I'm hearing is a lot of skill development and exposure to new ideas and stuff like that. What's the blueprint for sort of skill development? How should the average agent, you know, be practicing? Like, how do they get exposure to this stuff? Because I also see that, you know, most agents who struggle to stay motivated are isolated. You know, they don't collaborate a whole lot. They don't attend events. They don't join mastermind groups, all of that kind of stuff. And so they stay within their own little bubble. So when we talk about a blueprint for skill development, like, what does that look like when you meet with an agent? And I know, you know, if an agent is already in your proximity, they've obviously done a little bit of research and put themselves in front of you. But like, for those who are watching this, like, what does that look like? How can they get to the point where they're developing skills and, you know, staying motivated?
Again, fundamentally, from a mental map perspective, doctors have stethoscopes and syringes. Carpenters have hammers and nails. As salespeople, this is our instrument. So fine-tuning that, viewing this as a craft, no different than playing a violin at an expert level, no different than a surgeon, you know, performing surgery at a masterful level. So that's the belief behind it. Right. And then the next step would be is to recognize that, like, it's a skill, and as a skill implies that you can learn it, but it also implies practice. It is unrealistic and immature to imagine that if you don't spend time doing something consistently and regularly, you'll get good at it. Like, for anybody who's listening, imagine if you have a child or a niece or a nephew and they came to you and said, "Hey, I want to get better at soccer," and they sit on the couch all day long. What would be your guidance to them? What would be your recommendation to them, right? And we're no different in terms of the skill set. So I think community is really, really powerful, because it actually causes you to want to conform to the community or the group versus depending solely on your willpower. So, like, in other words, if you're in a group of people that are role-playing all the time and are hard charging and are ambitious and are working on their skills, as you're in that group, you'll want to conform to the group, right? Versus if you're all isolated by yourself trying to do it on your own. So I would find a really good group, whether it's us or somebody else, do it. So I have a school community. It's free. We don't charge any money for it. In there, you get access to our calendar. I do a role play with Jose. Between me and Jose, we sold 3,000 homes in our career. And we role play live, where you can hop on that call, you can ask questions, you can role play, and then me and him give you feedback live. That would be a really good place to start. And then recognize that, like, that is entry level. I had this conversation with my son recently, who, you know, he's playing soccer and he's playing travel soccer. I'm going to say something to you, though, and my intention isn't to be negative. It's not to dissuade you in any way. It's just to give you an accurate assessment of reality. You want to play in college or professionally. Would you say that what you're doing from a conditioning perspective, from a work on top of practice, outside of practice, is enough to accomplish that? And he said no right away. In our business, there was a time where there was 20,000 agents in the multiple listing service here in Southeast Florida, and only 100 of them, myself included, did more than 20 million in volume. That means you have 100 people chasing, or 20,000 people chasing 100 jobs. What do you do when everybody wants what you want? Like, you got to outwork them, right? So, like, right. It's what does my schedule look like? What does my practice schedule look like? Is it in alignment with that goal and objective? Because if not, I'm daydreaming. So Separate from a community that you can jump on and role play and get guidance from, what I would also suggest is that's like the barrier to entry. On top of that, what I'd be doing is chanting scripts out loud. I used to stand in my office and be like, "Hi, I was calling about the homeless for shelf industries. It's your owner, great. My name's Aaron, local real estate. I'm sure figured out by now. Your home come out," like, right? Out loud as fast as I could, 10 times. Yep. I would also, I started a role play twice a day, 6 days a week, right? Which—
How long did you do that?
3 years in a row.
Yeah.
Because I never wanted to have to look at my wife and be like, "Hey, we can't take the, you know, we can't send the kids to private school because the seller said, hey, your commission's too high," and I didn't know what to say, and I verbally vomited and walked out.
Yeah.
Or like, "Hey, we can't take that trip that you want to take because they told me that they were going to interview another agent, and I just said okie dokie, and I walked out and they listed with somebody else," right? Because that's really what's at stake here, right? So yeah, I would say community, and then so the mental maps, which we gave, plus the community, plus your own efforts outside of the community, which is role playing practice, writing out scripts, and even recording yourself. I did that for a while too, right? Yep. Just recording yourself practicing and role-playing and having a guide or somebody you can put that in front of so they can give you some, you know, critique on how you can improve.
Last question I wanted to ask you was more about financial freedom, because we've worked on that together a lot over the years as well. And you often talk about building a business that creates time and financial freedom. You know, for the listeners that are sort of watching right now, what's the practical next step for an agent that's looking to transition from high production to a business owner with, you know, sort of sustainable wealth?
Yeah. So I think the first question to ask yourself is, am I selling something or am I building something? The real estate profession is a cash grab. They basically look to increase their production and volume to make more money so they can rip out as much cash as they can to fund an ever-increasing lifestyle. The problem with that
part, the ever-increasing lifestyle.
Yeah, the ever-increasing lifestyle. And the problem with that is that it really creates like golden handcuffs, where you have nice stuff. At the same time, unfortunately, the rule in our business, not the exception, is that the people that you see with nice stuff or the people that you see on stage, more often than not, don't actually have like assets and don't actually have time freedom and location freedom. They have to sell real estate on up into their, you know, later years in life. I think that's the first question, right? Am I selling something or am I building something? The second question to ask yourself is, what am I actually optimizing for? Right? Because we have two choices there. One is I'm optimizing for status and comfort. The second is I'm optimizing for time freedom and location freedom. Those two have completely different paths.
Yeah.
And they lead completely different destinations. Because I believe, you know, are diligent and intentional and purposeful and a good steward of resources and live below your means and resist lifestyle inflation, within probably 15 to 20 years, you could be at a place where housing, transportation, food, and insurance is covered by investments. And that's what eats up most people's money. And then you're actually at a place where you no longer have to work for money if you don't choose to. I think, yeah, again, first, what am I am I selling something or am I building something? The second is, am I optimizing for comfort and convenience or am I optimizing for time freedom and location freedom? And then the third is recognizing what vehicles you have at your disposal that can help you to accomplish that time freedom and location freedom as fast as possible. So that could be investment vehicles and different assets that you have at your disposal to accomplish that. That could also be, you know, like the RevShare opportunity that eXp provides, because that has the capacity to build. And I know from direct experience, what took me 17 years to do with capital took me 10 months to do in that vehicle, right? So yeah, and then I also think it's really important to get access. You know, I think a lot of people who are listening to this, or perhaps, you know, will listen to it later, who bump into the material, you know, I think for most part, most agents are smart, hardworking, and ambitious. They have all the ingredients to make a chocolate cake, but all they need is a chef who can show them how to put those ingredients into a particular configuration. Right. So it's finding a guide who has actually accomplished time freedom and location freedom. So that way, again, you can get access to their thinking and access to like the building blocks that they use to accomplish it. But the majority of it is thinking and the majority of it is your belief system.
Right. And that comes back to proximity, right? Like being in proximity to people, to a guide, to other people that are doing these things. It's a lot easier to stay motivated if you're sort of around all the rest of your crew is all charging in a direction towards financial freedom. It's way easier to go in that direction than if you're sitting in isolation in your own office at your house, trying to stay motivated to do these things.
Well, yeah. And that goes back to like conformity, that's actually easier than willpower. So I think what's interesting, because I've been in these rooms, you know, particularly for real estate events, you have to be careful how you incentivize people because it shapes behavior. So what people get strokes and significance for, which is like the thing that everybody wants the most, they get significance for top line revenue, or they get significance for like flashy things. They're not getting significance. Watches. Yeah, cars, watches, this and that. So it ends up shaping behavior. And a quick story on that is I was in a, you know, mastermind with these group of guys, great salespeople. And he sends a picture of his watch. And then you see all of these other watches come through. And at the time, you know, I had like a little Apple watch on, right? So I send a picture of my watch, but then what I respond is, hey, now let's send a picture of our investment accounts. And what was wild, Ben, is like out of 16 guys, only two sent anything.
Yeah.
So crickets, So it demonstrated, again, am I optimizing for status and comfort or am I optimizing for time freedom and location freedom? And I would share with people, again, and I don't mean any shade or anything, but like I would be, it wasn't uncommon when I was in mastermind groups as a participant versus leading them, that I'd be one of the youngest people on the call. And I would share with them, hey guys, like if truth, because I would hear people perhaps, you know, in later years in life, 60s, 70s, and they're still on this call. And I'm like, guys, I mean this with so much love. I'm not trying to be a jerk. If I am still on this call at that time in my life, and I am still talking about contacts and listings, like I messed up.
That was the same experience that I had at events where I would see somebody stand up and everybody would clap it for them because they were 75 years old, still making 30 contacts, 40 contacts a day. And I literally said, that's my worst nightmare if I end up like that, right? And I had that conscious recognition that that's not what I wanted out of my life, but I didn't have the roadmap. Like all I had was the information in front of me that was given. That was like, and like you said, it's sort of addicting when you buy that car, you buy the watch, you have the nice suit, when you walk up and you said, I had $1 million in GCI, right? But you're only keeping 40% of it. And then it all goes
after expenses. You're making, you're keeping like, you know, 80 grand.
And then it doesn't make any sense. You're still stressed out about money. You're still like, you, and then, like you put on your, you know, your best suit and you go out there and puff your chest out, but then you go home and you like the, all that ends, right?
Well, that so it ends up like becoming, I mean, it truly is like a distraction. Like I'm aware we live on an economic planet. At the same time, like as I get older, what is increasingly becoming very clear to me is that, you know, the command is like to love one another. And like this idea that like relationships are like really, really what's most valuable. I showed them a slide that showed the amount of time that you spend with your children and how it drops precipitously once you reach the age of like 45-ish, depending on when you have kids. So like 90% of all the time you spend is from the time they're born till the time they're 18. Yeah. Well, that's usually when people in their 40s, they're still working and they're working through that whole thing, right? What was also interesting is the time that you spend with family, just like general family, right? Not your nuclear family, but like brothers, sisters, you know, aunts, uncles, that also drops precipitously over time. You know, I think that if we're not careful, we can, if we're not purposeful, intentional, because I think the siren call of the world, I mean, you know, our whole economic system is based on consumption. So we're constantly being kind of pushed to consume, right? And I don't think that that's bad because I'm a capitalist at heart. At the same time, like we still have to be like intentional. The people that I find that have produced the most favorable outcomes, they didn't like just step in it.
Right.
It was very thought out, very mindful, very purposeful. I mean, you were at that first Freedom Builders event, the mastermind that we did. And that was really legendary. If you remember that workout on the beach, bro, that was so cool. Awesome. There's actually the pictures right over there. But anyway, and you saw me start to map this out. I'm like, hey, here's what I'm thinking. And here's how I'm going to do it, right? So it was like super intentional, super purposeful. You know, I think that if we are mindful, we can reclaim a lot of time so we can pour into these areas, whether it's our faith, whether it's our family, whether it's our bodies, right? These are all things that we sacrifice in the pursuit of, you know, status, let's say.
Most people do it and continue to do it without ever recognizing the cost of what it's, what
it is. Unfortunately, until it's probably too late.
Right. Kids are gone, health is gone, whatever, the marriage is gone. Like we wait until that moment and then we're like, how did we ever get here?
Yeah. I remember being on a call with a guy and he was like, you know, that young, aggressive, ambitious. Like, yeah. I want to make $1 million. I'm like, well, good for you. I want you to make $1 million. Let me ask you a question. He's like, yeah. I'm like, all right, well, what if you made $1 million, but you ended up divorced and somebody else raised your kids? Mm-hmm. You still successful? And he was like, you're watching like his brain start to scramble, right? And again, like this is important that we're just thoughtful because I know to get anything off the ground is going to take a lot of time. Like I get that. And I've certainly experienced that in my life. At the same time, what I've also learned is based on my understanding of leverage, we don't live in a world of rich and poor. We don't live in a world of haves and have nots. We live in a world of people who have leverage and people who don't. Mm-hmm. We're constrained by our understanding or lack of understanding of leverage. And what I've experienced is the more leverage that I put into my life, like those higher forms, whether it's like media, like capital, media, and code, software, the actual more time that I'm able to reclaim and I'm able to do more with less. So a lazy mind's answer is just to work harder. And we have this whole grind culture, hustle culture. I definitely was a part of that at one point in my career. At the same time, if all it took was hard work, the donkey would own the farm. The donkey's the hardest working one on this. You know what I'm saying? Like if that's all it took, the donkey would own the farm, but that's not what it is, right? It takes something more than that. And a more sophisticated mind says, hey, wait a minute, what tools, What leverage, what skills do I have at my disposal? What communities do I have at my disposal that would allow me to do more with less? Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're talking about here.
That's a perfect way to end it, because obviously on September 18th, you're coming up to the greater Boston area to speak at the event that we're having in Norwood. It's going to be an outstanding time, and we're super excited about it. But this is the opportunity that I've been talking to a lot of agents locally about when we talk about mental roadmaps and proximity and collaboration and, you know, kind of putting yourself in the right situation to even start this whole process. You've got to start somewhere, and you've got to start exploring who really inspires you. You know, is it guys like Aaron or myself, or is it, I don't even really care who it is, but if this event is the opportunity that will allow you to either get perspective that somebody else is a better guide for you, or whatever sort of value you can take away. This is one of those unique events that I think is going to be truly powerful for the people that are there. So we're excited to have you come up and spend the day with us. And I know everybody's going to be super excited to see you as well. So look forward to seeing you up on the 18th. And just tell everybody, where can they find you if they want to consume more of your content?
Yeah, so I am equally as excited to spend some time with you and your wife and the kids. And my experience is we're all one relationship away from changing our family tree for the rest of our life. I've had about 5 of those relationships in my life and counting. Leadership in the organization, our intention is to be that relationship for as many people as possible. A lot of those relationships for me, I met them via an event. I put a lot of content on YouTube, so just at Aaron Novello on YouTube. And also just let me know if it's been helpful or useful to you in some way, because that's why we create it.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, appreciate you, brother.
Thanks, man.